It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Well, today I'm talking with multi-instrumentalist, singer, songwriter, producer, and performer, Todd Dammit Kearns. Todd is best known as the bass player and backing vocalist for Slash, featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, as well as the frontman of the Age of Electric. But there's another side to Todd that fans are getting a special opportunity to experience right here in Las Vegas. On Saturday, August 22nd, Todd will bring an intimate, unplugged performance to the Hard Rock Cafe Las Vegas on the Strip, with proceeds benefiting the Nevada SPCA. And there is a great way for fans to help. You can bring an unopened bag or can of cat or dog food and receive a raffle ticket for a chance to win prizes. So let's talk about Todd's remarkable career, the appeal of stripping down songs to their acoustic roots, and why giving back to animals is such an important part of this special Las Vegas performance. And for more information, go to cafe.hardrock.com/las-vegas. That's a mouthful. And follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And for everything about Todd, go to Todd Kearns, K-E-R-N-S, toddkearns.com. You can follow him on X and YouTube. And Todd, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. I have to tell you, I was about to tell you before we started, but you're one of the few rock musicians that appear to me, I know this might damage your career, as to being perfectly normal.
Me? Well, I, you know, honestly, I'll accept that. I think everybody's quirky in their own way. Sometimes, you know, the most normal people we know have, you know, think about the most normal guy you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, they'll have some bizarre collection at home or something. And you'll be like, okay, he's definitely got something about him that's a little.
Oh, like a bizarre collection of guitars, for example, right?
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah,
yeah, it's like, there's that as well.
It's like living in a guitar center in here.
But maybe a little bit more money, though.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. They're taking all my money, apparently.
Yes. Well, what I meant by normal is that you appear to be. I just see a business side to you and a logical side to you, as well as a musician side to you. Would that be fair?
I think to some degree. I think a lot of that is something that's sort of been forced upon me over the years in a way. I mean, when I say forced upon me, I mean, you just sort of learn to survive. You know, I mean, just yesterday I was talking to the drummer for my Canadian band, Took. I'm getting ready to go up to Canada to play this weekend. And we were just talking about how lucky we are to be still doing this, you know, because every once in a while you'll be like, you know, whatever little grievance that might appear, but you go, you know what, in an industry that every single year seems to have some sort of, now people are downloading, so people aren't buying records. And then now it's AI, who knows what's going to happen to us. And I go, well, you know what, in 2026, on this weekend, I am fine.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean by being normal. You're in the present. So
yeah. And I think adapting to whatever is around you is just sort of, I don't know. I think of it like a jazz musician or something like that. You're always ready to jam. You know, it's kind of, and when you play as live as much as I do, oh, this, he's broken a snare drum. He broke a guitar string. And it's all about like, well, we don't just stop the show. You know, it's kind of like, we just keep going. We have to keep moving forward. And I think that's true in life as well.
I have to ask the obligatory question, which I'm sure you've been asked 1,000 times, but for new fans and listeners and viewers, where did the Dammit middle name come from?
Well, it rhymes with my name, Todd, Dammit, would rhyme with GD. So that would be kind of like, it just sort of was a silly nickname that stuck from years ago. So now the fact that it acts as a sort of middle name makes it confusing. But as soon as you hear that, you go, I mean, it could just as easily have been Toddzilla or, you know, any other sort of version of that you wanted to use. But that one just sort of stuck. It was just a silly nickname. It was when Slash really started to use it that it really became kind of like, oh, okay, well, now it's almost universal in a way. Yeah.
Well, you're merching it now too. So that helps.
Well, yeah, that was all very sort of, I'm looking around trying to see if anything around here has Dammit on it, but most things do. It just sort of, became a thing. It just sort of started as a t-shirt, one t-shirt that said Dammit on it. And then, people were going, where can I get that shirt? And I go, this is the shirt. This is the only shirt. You know? And then it turned into a thing. And now, here we are. So, you know, it's this last tour we did, I did a run with Triumph, the band from Canada that we did a whole run across Canada and through the U.S. And I made a point of having T-shirts that said Toronto, damn it, or Jones Beach, damn it, or Chicago, damn it, or wherever the hell we were. And we sold those shirts, stage worn shirts, and raising money for cat sanctuaries and stuff like that that we do. It's just part of what I do.
Yeah, no, and it's delightful. I'm going to talk in more detail about that in a moment. I just want to get a little bit of your background. I know you were born and raised in Canada, and you were in a remote part of Canada. I think, if I remember correctly, the town is so small that both city limit signs are on the same post. Is that
correct? Well, it's funny because I spent half my life in northern Canada, and it was very, very far from anything. Like there was, you know, if there was there was no chance of seeing concerts or anything like that. So God bless things like the Don Kirshner Rock Concert or the Midnight Special, any of those things that played when I was a child. Plus all the Canadian versions of live music that was on television, because that was sort of our only lifeline to anything that would have been sort of going on in any sense of current, in a current way. So it was a little out of touch. When I moved further south for high school, we were closer to a city called Saskatoon, which is a very small city, but at least we had bands would come there. You know what I mean? So, and into my teenage years, we saw a lot of concerts, but the town was, you know, that town was 1500 people, no streetlights, no, just the other day, I saw some friends of mine, who live out there still. And they said, we got a Dairy Queen now. And I go, whoa, what? Like, that's some big city stuff right there. They got a Dairy Queen and a Subway sandwich shop because it happens to be right on the major highway. So I said, well, yeah. Cause I mean, it means you stop for gas and you get some Dairy Queen and off you go. But it's, that, I mean, they didn't have that when I was a kid. When I was a kid, we literally had no streetlights. You know, I think one bar, the local bar, and it was just a very small town, one school. You know, so it was. But like I say, the city was about an hour and 10 away, and it wasn't a big city, but it was a city. And then there was another city that was about 90 minutes away. So you know, we made the best of just. As soon as I was out of high school, I was immediately off to the city. And then that city turned into a bigger city and then turned into a bigger city and then eventually led me here.
Well, and how did you develop, I guess, the idea that you wanted to be a musician? I know you have a brother who's also a musician as well.
Two brothers, actually, yeah.
Two brothers, that's correct. But how, I'm correcting you. Like, yeah, of course. I said two brothers.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
I was just thinking of one that came to mind at the moment. But how did you, all three of you, decide this was the path to go?
Well, I was just talking to some friends about this yesterday because we all played hockey. You know, because that's sort of the law in Canada.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's an ordinance and state law and national law.
They'll take away your passport.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we, you know, but as soon as we started picking up guitars, and I think that the joke is that it's cold enough that there's really nothing else to do. So you're either playing outdoor sports or you're playing guitar or you're something along those lines. So for us, it became a bunch of us picked up guitars around the same time. And decided to start making an awful racket together in our parents' garages, you know, or in our parents' basements, depending on how, testing the patience of our parents, basically.
Of course. I want to mention, because we mentioned that, but we didn't mention their names, John and Ryan are your brothers.
That's correct. Yes. They were much younger than me. Well, much younger. The next youngest was, he is two and a half years younger than me. And then the one after that is 6 years younger than me. So the fact that me and my next younger brother started playing together was fairly normal, even though I was like 14 years old when I started playing in bands with guys way older than me. And these guys were already out of high school and they were playing local bars. And I was always sort of left in the kitchen between sets or whatever, because I wasn't really allowed to be in the bar. You know, I wasn't old enough. So that's a very common story amongst most of my musician friends of how, like, I was 15 and we had to wait in the bar or wait in the, you know, some sort of waiting area while, you know, between sets or before and after you went on, because it's a bar and you're not old enough to be there. So I was tall, so I could kind of fake my way into some situations and sneak into bars to see rock bands and whatnot. But I think that, you know, it was, when you say as if I had a a choice of pursuing music in terms of a career. It was more just a case of being obsessed with music and being obsessed with rock and roll. My parents were musical, but they weren't really obsessive music people. Mm-hmm. So there were records around. There was Johnny Cash and there was the Beatles and there was Elvis. And those were the major food groups. And, you know, from that, you kind of go, you know, the Beatles bones connected to the Stones bone and the Stones bone right, connected exactly. to the Who and the Kinks. And, you know, and a lot of this music, like I say, is so many of my relatives would be like, they'd be kind of curious why I was so interested in this music that to them was old school. Right. And so many of them were kind of like, I would go to relatives' houses and they would have vinyl records. We just called them back then. And it'd be like, yeah, you can have all this. We don't really listen to this anymore. You know? And I'd be, what? It was like, you may as well have told me there was a pile of money over there. Just take that money, you know? And I would literally just take an entire, you know, carload of records home. And some of it was stuff that I wouldn't be that interested in, at least at that time. But, you know, within that, there would be like everything, you know, all this great Cream bands like that, that I never probably would have really dug into, because take into account by then Eric Clapton is a blues solo artist and I'm finding like his 60s music and whatnot. So I just became obsessed with rock and roll and of course all the current stuff as well. You know, we were as children, Kiss and Cheap Trick and bands like that were 100% the biggest things around.
Did you have a mentor growing up?
Yeah, you know,
not an idol, but a mentor. In other words, someone that actually you talked to or got some suggestions from, guidance from, that type.
It's funny because my seventh grade teacher, who I'm still in touch with, was a musician. And he was just our teacher in this very remote northern Canadian town. He probably was like 25 years old, like in retrospect, you know, but he had a Gibson Les Paul. You know, and I always say he may as well have had Excalibur in his house. You know, we were just like, what? You know, we'd never actually seen a Gibson Les Paul in person other than magazines or the Midnight Special or whatever TV show we'd seen. And he was really a rock guitar guy who just happened to be a teacher. And he loaned me this, you know, some no-name electric guitar that he had because I didn't have one. I just had my acoustic guitar. And I would consider him a mentor for sure. Mm-hmm. My eighth grade teacher, these two guys were roommates, which is what's really interesting, is I was obsessed with The Who as a young kid, and I had The Who on the back of my jacket, which is very strange because, you know, when I say this, it's kind of like The Who would have been like very out of step with whatever was going on with the kids amongst us. but I was just obsessed with The Who was kind of what led to punk rock for me and all the things that this loud, abrasive smashing of things and whatnot.
Would they let you in a hotel room when they saw Who on your back?
Exactly. You got to be careful with that one. Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a great story of Keith Moon in Saskatoon trashed a Holiday Inn hotel room, which I've stayed in that hotel many times. And I'm always like, what room was it? But my eighth grade teacher was like, it was the first time I'd engaged besides my seventh grade teacher, Mr. Mack. Mr. Hartle said to me, just randomly, he goes like, Jimmy Page is a better guitar player than Pete Townsend. I'd never had this conversation with an adult. I was sort of aware of Led Zeppelin, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't own any of the records or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember him just sort of going, you know, I think he was just kind of ribbing me, you know, kind of like, and I went, oh yeah, and kind of thing. And the next day, or maybe that day, I don't know, I went and bought Led Zeppelin 2 and had my life changed then too. You know, it was sort of you know, that opening of Whole Lot of Love is a big one, you know. So finding these people and they really sort of present this whole other thing to you. In a lot of ways, I probably could have been a doctor or a lawyer, but it's these guys' fault mostly. You know? By the time I started playing with these other guys, these older guys, I was still barely proficient. My father, I always tell the story how my father had it in his mind that, well, you have a guitar. I had an acoustic guitar. He goes, you should get a bass guitar. And I remember thinking like, oh yeah, I guess. I mean, I wasn't really thinking I should get an electric six-string guitar. Like I thought maybe I should just have an electric guitar and an amplifier. But in his strange thinking, he thought, my dad was as fascinated with music in a different way. Like I think he just loved the whole idea of it. But I don't think he necessarily was all that gung-ho about, you should pursue this as a career option. I just think he thought this would be a fun it could have been dirt bikes, you know, but it's like, what about guitars? So we bought a bass guitar, and that the bass guitar led to me playing in bands with guys way older than me because nobody wanted to play bass. So I ended up playing with these guys way older than me. And those guys would become mentors in a whole other way, in a, probably in a more realistic way, because they were talented in writing songs and had, you know, connections to agencies and doing these high school dances and different bars and all these things that they would play.
They had road experience too.
Exactly. I mean, very limited, like in retrospect now, when I look back at it, but they certainly, to me, had very much, you know, to me, they were the real deal. And in retrospect now, I guess what I do is a gazillion times more than that. But at the time it seemed very real to me.
Listening to you, I just thought of another career for you, except that radio is not doing as well as it used to do decades ago, but you have this wonderful FM radio voice.
You know what? It's people have brought that up to me all the time. And I go, I appreciate that. I wouldn't have the foggiest clue on how to pursue that. You know, I remember the guy, you know, from the city radio station would come to our small town, and they treated him like a rock star. This is kind of like, I go, well, he's the DJ. We don't know what he looked like. And he was just happened to be at, like, you know, at some event that they had. Well, I don't know what it was, probably a, who knows, a Smash Up Derby or some, who knows what the hell it was. Right. And they treated him like a rock star. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't even know that was a career option. Here you go. Yeah. So in retrospect, who knows?
Yeah, better FM than AM in your case, because you have that kind of modulated voice. It's a natural for you.
I appreciate that. You have the same skill. We could start our own radio show.
Okay, let's do that. I like that. Ira and Todd and Ira. Probably Todd. And I don't play guitar, so.
Oh, that's all right. But we're playing music. We're you know.
That's true. Okay.
Playing existing music.
I want to talk about your music coming up at the Hard Rock Cafe in a second, but I was intrigued also by the fact that you've played with so many different bands. I just touched on a couple, and there's so many that you've played with and rock and roll performers as well. How do you keep from getting, I don't know if the word is, it's not cynical, that's not the word I'm going for, but it's more fatigued or hard-bitten, or I don't know what it is, but you don't seem to have that vibe at all.
You know, it's funny because I just literally am coming off of about a week off. And there are times where you come out of, you know, a run, whether it's on the road or a long studio session or whatever, and you just kind of, there is fatigue, like there would have been in anybody's sort of like long work week or whatever else. And you just sort of find yourself just kind of like crash landing into your own bed at home and kind of going like, I'm not leaving this bed and I'm not leaving this house and I'm going to, you know.
It's not so much the work as that I see certain rock performers that have perhaps spent a little bit too much time with recreational stuff. And
well, yeah, I'm sort of well past all that. I mean, my friend always says the best when he says, you know, they don't really need to pay me for music. I'll do that for free. It's all the other stuff, the travel. And
yeah, everybody tells me that. Every time I interview, they say it's the travel that's the miserable. Yeah. The performing is what I'm getting paid. I'm getting paid to travel, not perform. I enjoy performing. Something like
exactly.
That.
And then, but the other side, now that I've been off for a week, I'm getting ready to go and play. Like I got to travel tomorrow up to Canada and play a show. And I'm like, and you have that kind of like, oh, this will be great. It'll be great to see the guys. It'll be great to play some people. I'm going to say hi to some folks that I haven't seen in a long time. So, you know, I've always tried to remind myself, there's a great line by the New York Dolls in a song that says, they go to work, we go to play. And I always try to remember that because it's like, even living in Las Vegas, I have so many friends who play in all these different shows and stuff. And they'll say stuff like, oh, I'm working Thursday. I go, bro, I just can't hear it. I go, you play guitar. You know,
yeah,
bro,
you're
playing Thursday. I go, anybody who works a normal job and loves music or had an aspiration to play music would die to do what you do, you know? So to me, it's always kind of like you really have to remind yourself. And it's not always easy. And there's definitely a lot of sacrifices and things that go on with it, especially when you travel. But you do have to remind yourself that it's one of those classic cliches of like you have to remind yourself that all these things are things that you would have killed for when you were 14 years old. So to be here now, it's very much one of those situations where I go, man, I feel blessed, really. And I think that, like I say, you never know from one year to the next. They told us when COVID came along. It's like, we're never going to tour again. Or when people started downloading records, we're never going to be able to do this anymore. And now it's AI and everything else. It's sort of like, oh, what are we going to do? And I go, well, I'm still here. You know, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay here as long as you'll keep me. And I'll figure out the next thing after that. I think, like I said, it's like being in a jazz musician where I'm just going to roll with the changes, you know?
And you've been in Las Vegas for 20 years. I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, I've been here long enough to see, you know, the Riviera and the Frontier and all that go away, you know, and the Stardust, you know, they were here when I got here. I always say I got here post Dunes. Dunes was gone. I never saw the Dunes, and I'm always fascinated whenever somebody talks about stuff. I go, was the Dunes still there? I'm always kind of, I don't know. I use that as sort of my, because I first came here and I was staying at the Bellagio. That's my first. So, and I remember like, this used to be the Dunes, or, you know, it used to be here. It's obviously clearly a different building. Yeah.
So on August 22nd, you're going to be at the Hard Rock Cafe. And what I like about, besides the fact that you're going to be there, is that proceeds are going to be benefiting the Nevada SPCA. How did you get involved in that? And also tell us a little bit about what are some of the songs that you're going to be doing and the set that you're going to be doing. It's an intimate, unplugged performance, as I mentioned a little while ago. Pardon my voice, ladies and gentlemen, but it just is the way it is at the moment. Go ahead.
I think it sounds great. You got a real kind of raspy, you know, it's like dripping honey in people's ears. I think they're going to appreciate that.
Okay, good. All right. I like that.
it's a pre-Guns N' Roses party. Guns will be playing over at Allegiant Stadium directly after. So I'll probably be leaning into a bit of that. As anybody knows, I play with Slash.
Right.
So, and you know, I know Duff, and I know Richard, and I know Dizzy, and Isaac, the drummer. The only person I don't really know is Axel, although we've been to events together, but I've never actually been like, hi, I'm Todd. And then the Black Crowes are also playing that night as well. So I'll probably lean into a bit of that. I mean, I do play my own stuff. I do these acoustic things pretty often. I've always tried to do my own shows, and I try to get friends up. I haven't done a whole lot of reaching out just yet onto who I'm going to try and drag up to make some racket with me. But I usually convince somebody to come and play. Last time I had Bruce Kulick from Kiss. He's a very good friend of mine. We play together all the time. And it's one of those things where we've sort of done raising money for the SPCA has always been a focus. I mean, during COVID, we took on one by one, a giant Irish Catholic family of cats. So, yeah.
How to describe it?
It's like, you know, we just sort of, you know, had a cat walk through our door one day. And I was always very, not anti-pet, because I've had many pets in my life, but because I'm constantly traveling and my wife will often travel with me, and now we are empty nesters, that we sort of just aren't really in a position to have pets, and then suddenly found ourselves trapped at home going like, well, there's no excuse now. We can be here for this cat and the next one and the next one and the next one that we've kind of acquired, because we started getting very, very involved in cat rescue. This town has a lot of issues with stray cat colonies and whatnot. I don't know if you ever noticed over at the Rio, there's a whole cat colony situation that goes on over there that, I mean, it's the most interesting thing about animals. I think, you know, whether it's horses or dogs or cats, they will find a way to survive. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that. But within the SPCA, it's trying to keep these numbers as, you know, as manageable as possible, which is, let's be honest, pretty unmanageable. And anybody you speak to in that industry will tell you it's a sort of a losing battle, but we do the best we can. So
yeah, that's the important thing. If they bring an unopened can of cat or dog food, they receive a raffle ticket for a chance to win prizes, which is an extra little touch there as well. So it's a great way to see you perform and at the same time benefit the Nevada SPCA.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, we did this over Christmas, and it was just sort of like, let's do it. Let's have fun with it. And you just don't know what to expect. Half the time you're thinking, my friends are just going to come and play music and go like, oh, right, I was supposed to bring a can of dog food or whatever. But we had so much stuff. Like the SPCA came by, you know, at the end of the show, or they may have been there during the show. I don't remember exactly, but I just remember them being completely overwhelmed. Like, we are totally unprepared for this amount of donations that people had brought. It was crazy, like huge bags of dog food and cat litter and all this stuff. And it was like, it was so heartwarming to see, because
well, couldn't they store it at your place?
At my place?
Yeah, why not? I mean, you know.
And they I will be honest, you'd be surprised how much stuff, because we have an Irish Catholic family full of cats, that there's it looks like a storage unit for cat food and stuff anyway. But honestly, we would gladly do that. But I mean, the idea was to try and get as much of this stuff to these fine people as we can. And in doing so, it just sort of like I say, it's just a matter of trying to help as much as we can and trying to find some. You know, I feel fortunate enough to be able to do this for a living and to do this and have people show up and maybe want to come and see it. If we can help in some way on the side in whatever fashion, then I'm happy to do so.
Now, that's a great idea and it's a great worthwhile cause, especially if all of us are animal lovers, dogs, cats, horses, et cetera.
I like to think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what the appeal is. And yes, you want to help humans too, but sometimes dogs and cats are more independent than dogs, but they still need humans to nurture them and to take care of them.
Yeah. And it's fascinating, man. I was like, you know, I mean, when the summer comes along, you know, we look down at our, you know, brood of mostly stray, or actually they all would have been stray animals really. And I think, man, could you imagine like any one of these being out on the street or out in the desert during this extreme summer?
Sure.
And you just think I just don't know how that works. I mean, like I say, there are cat colonies and tons of stray animals that manage to survive, and it's a real testament to their will. But yeah, it's no joke out here. You know what it's like. I always say, you see what the sun is doing to our cars. Imagine what it's doing to this.
Yeah.
Or anybody and the animals and all kinds of things. Yeah, it's rough.
So don't forget August 22nd. Before I let you go, what future plans for Todd Current?
Oh gosh. Well, that's a big one. I'm in and out of Canada, all summer into the fall with my thing called Toque it's a super group of my friends that play with a bunch of different acts, and we do a bunch of stuff in Canada. We are working on another leg of Triumph. Triumph, of course, was a massive band back in the 80s and 70s. And, you know, Canadian dear friends of mine that I've been lucky enough to be a part of when they do these runs. We're looking to do one of those. And then
not to be confused with Triumph, the insult dog.
No, that's a totally different Triumph, who is also a legend. And then next year, towards the fourth quarter of this year, there should hopefully be a single from the new Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators record floating around. So we have completed an album, and it's going to be dropping early 2027. And the single will hopefully be floating around before the end of the year.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Todd Dammit Kearns. He's performing this Saturday, August 22nd, with an intimate, unplugged performance at the Hard Rock Cafe on the Las Vegas Strip. Proceeds benefiting the Nevada SPCA. For more information, go to cafe.hardrock.com/las-vegas and follow them on Facebook and Instagram. For everything about Todd, go to Todd Kearns, K-E-R-N-S, toddkearns.com. Follow him on X and YouTube. And Todd, thanks for being on the show.
100% my pleasure. Are you kidding?
Thank you. See you next time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, Las Vegas. Anything you want us to be.